Several years ago, we hosted here at Christ the King a program called Financial Peace University. And I remember I attended the class with many of you. And I remember one night, one of the videos in particular, where this gentleman who presents it, Dave Ramsey, was talking about his own conversion. And he was talking about how he, you know, if he managed his finances better and all this, he would be able to do all these things for the Lord. And then it occurred to him that this idea of doing something for the Lord, in a way, seems kind of ludicrous. Why? Because as if God needed us for anything, right? This is the all-powerful God, the one who's always been and always will be, who created, can create out of nothing. What does he need us for? In a real sense, he doesn't. The beautiful thing is that he asks us to participate with him. You see, strictly speaking, God does not need our help. But the beautiful thing about our God is he's so loving, so compassionate, that he reaches out to us and invites us to be part of what he does. I think one of the keys to responding to that is realizing that it's not about, first, about what we do for God, but what God does for us. You hear this reflected in the second reading. St. Paul is talking about how he progressed in Judaism beyond any of his contemporaries. In other words, he's saying, I was a really religious guy. It'd kind of be the modern equivalent of being like, I was a super Catholic, you know? I knew all my Catholic stuff and I did all my Catholic things. But he still didn't know God. And so he says a few sentences later, then God called me through grace. You see, it wasn't until he realized that it wasn't about what he does for God, but about what God has done for him, that he really went through a conversion. It's you seeking God versus God seeking you. How do you approach your faith? If you approach it as God seeking you, then you can experience a real conversion, a real intimacy with God. And we see this reflected in our readings today. Number one, we see it in the gospel with this son. This woman has lost her only son. She's already a widow. And keep in mind, in the Jewish culture, this means she would be destitute, outcast, no one to care for her. I think God has a special place in his heart for people like this. Why? Because Jesus' own mother went through this. It is commonly believed that Joseph had died by the time that Jesus was crucified, and then she lost her only son. This is why Jesus, hanging on the cross, says to her, to her and to John, woman, behold your son, son, behold your mother. In one translation of this gospel, it says that Jesus' heart broke for her. When it says that he had compassion for her, or pitied her, his heart broke for her. We celebrated this past Friday the Feast of the Sacred Heart. And I think sometimes we forget that God has an affection for us. God's heart breaks for us because he loves us that much. In the same gospel, we see Jesus reaching out to this coffin. Now remember, in the Jewish culture, it was considered unclean to touch a dead person or anything surrounding a dead person. And so for Jesus to walk up in the middle of a funeral procession and touch this coffin was odd. And you can imagine, I mean, imagine if we're having a funeral and the pallbearers are processing out with the casket and somebody just comes, you know, walking up and like just randomly touches the coffin, you'd be like, what are you doing, buddy? And this is what Jesus did. They stopped. He wasn't afraid of being considered unclean or weird. He just had this burning passion to help out this son and his mother. And that same God that reached out to that dead son 2,000 years ago is the same God that's reaching out today. He reaches out to the unclean. He reaches out in the circumstances that are considered weird. Brothers and sisters, let him reach out to you, especially in your uncleanliness. Lastly, God wants us then, once we've experienced his compassion, his reaching out to us, then he asks us to simply share that with others, to reach out to other people. You know, as a priest, you have a good number of funerals. And a lot of times I'll be here early and it'll just be me and the people from the funeral home. And they'll be all set up and we visit about things like, you know, where to put flowers and, you know, does the casket look okay? And another thing that we commonly visit about is how many people do we think will come to the funeral? Mainly for logistics reasons. But it also got me wondering, you know, does that say something about the deceased? We had a funeral a couple years ago, and it was a very large funeral. Many people showed up. And I said something during the homily. I said, how beautiful that so many people showed up, you know, to honor this person. Of course, I got a nasty letter the following week saying, well, nobody showed up at my mom's funeral. Does that mean nobody loved her? No, that's not what I meant. How many people will show up at yours? But more importantly, why will they show up? In the Jewish tradition, it wasn't uncommon to actually pay people to come to your funeral so that it looked as if you were well loved. I'm going to have to start saving up. Rather, wouldn't it be better if somebody came to your funeral because you had touched their life? Because that same compassion that made Jesus reach out to a widow and her deceased son, that same compassion that reached out through the uncleanliness, through the social stigma, and reached out and touched a life, what if you did the same? What if you did the same once a day for the rest of your life? How many people would show up to your funeral? I bet it would be many. Did you know there are only three times in the Bible that Jesus raised people from the dead, excluding himself? I mean, you would think that the God who became man to save us from eternal death might do a little more raising from the dead, a little more graveside visiting. But he doesn't. Why? You got to remember that everything that God does, he does in not in view of today, not in view of the past, not in view of the future, but in view of eternity. Okay, so everything God allows in your life, every challenge, every blessing, every person you encounter, every situation you encounter, he allows, permits, or directly wills, not in view of some limited scope, like your life, but rather eternity. And that's how he views things. You see, Jesus could have gone around raising people from the dead right and left, but they would have simply died again, right? So many of us approach God in a very similar way. God, I want you to do this for me. Why did you allow so-and-so to die? Why did you allow such-and-such to happen? And we almost get upset with God. And yet we must remember that everything he does in view of eternity. Jesus came not just to raise the dead who will die again. He came to teach you and I compassion. To be part of a people that shows their love even in suffering. How many people's lives have you touched with your compassion? And when you find that you do not, or when you find that you've experienced that compassion from God, that's when you truly want to reach out and give it to others. Remember, it's not about us sitting there and saying to ourselves, oh, I need to love more. It starts with being loved more. And then you'll naturally want to share it with others. Remember, God, strictly speaking, doesn't need you. But he does want you. All of you. Even the unclean parts. Let him touch you with his compassion. Touch you in your uncleanliness, so that you in turn can touch others.